You're listening to C2Y Podcast. We bring you discussions on child and youth care that feature conversations with young people, parents, and professionals about the youth social service system. Introducing your host, Wolfgang Vachon.
Welcome to C2Y Podcast Discussions on Child and Youth Care. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. This episode continues the conversation with Dr. Mary Vachon, started in the September 2014 podcast. In September, we spoke about the death of a caregiver. In this podcast, we talk about the death of children. Dr. Vachon talks about how to work with children who are dying, how to support caregivers whose children are dying, and finally, how to care for ourselves as we work in this very difficult area. Dr. Vachon is a registered nurse, PhD psychotherapist, in private practice with a focus on death and dying. She has been working in this area since the late 1960s and has published over 170 scientific articles and book chapters in the areas of bereavement, occupational stress, and healthcare professionals, dealing with life-threatening illnesses, and spirituality, among other related topics. Before we go to the conversation, I encourage all of you to share c2ypodcast.org with your friends and colleagues. There are millions of people around the world who work with children and youth. Not all of them listen to this podcast yet. Do you know anyone else who works with young people who might benefit from this podcast? If so, tweet it, share it, post it, or speak about it. This is our 43rd episode, and there are many other podcasts to check out. Thanks for listening and sharing. Here is the continuation of my conversation with Dr. Mary Vachon. No parent should have to bury their child is a well-known saying in English. Sadly, for many parents, they have to confront the death of their own child. Some of these deaths are going to be known in advance. Some are not going to be known in advance. I like to take the idea of each of these in turn. Let's start with caregivers. How can a professional caregiver support children who are dying?
Well, I think the first thing is for the caregiver to have taken the time to have thought through and worked through his or her own feelings about kids dying. You know, so if you've come into this, you know, as I came into this work, in part through my brother and young uncle's death, you have to make sure that you've done as much of your own work about resolving your own issues as you can, so you're not dumping your stuff onto the kids who are dying, and you're not distancing yourself because of your own issues.
Can we just start with that for a moment?
Sure.
What does that look like? Taking care. We often talk about this idea of, you know, doing your own work, taking care of yourself. You know, you mentioned in our last interview about your own meditation practice. What does taking care and resolving our own issues look like as service providers?
Well, I like the work of the meditation teacher that I work with, Maria Gonzalez, who talks in terms of all of our life experiences are like knots, and we have to untie these knots on the road to becoming clear and transparent human beings on the road to enlightenment, which is a bit esoteric. However, the issue is that if we haven't untied our own knots, then other things will hook onto them. And so what this involves is somehow looking at your own feelings and your own thoughts and images that go along with your own previous life experiences. So one of the meditative techniques is to actually go into something that's called feel space. So when we are confronted with a situation, we often, first of all, feel something in our body. And so that may be in your chest, in your heart, in your gut, in your throat, in your head. You may feel it in a number of places. And often, as soon as we have that feeling, so something may feel very sad, and we feel it in our gut, and we very quickly go into our head, and we begin to make a story. Oh, yeah, this is reminding me of whatever, whatever, whatever. And then we're caught off in our own story, and we're not able to be present to the person who is dying or, you know, who is grieving at this point in time. So really recognizing, perhaps working with a therapist about our own experiences, perhaps, you know, doing the business of, I talked about the last session, with writing a letter to the person in your own life who has died and letting that person write back to you. Imagine yourself dialoguing with the person who has died. You know, those are a variety of ways, but having someone that you can talk to about how talking with this person who's dying, this child who's dying, is triggering things in yourself. So having a good supervisor, for example.
Right, great. So let's imagine that an individual is doing their own work. They have their own practice to deal with any unresolved issues and continue to deal with issues as they come up. How else can they support children who are dying?
Well, the first thing is to recognize that this is not me, you know, this is part of the human condition, you know, that I am not this child and this child is not me, but we are two people. Let me go to the construct of compassion, you know, that compassion is recognizing that the other person is suffering and wanting to alleviate the suffering, and recognizing that I too am suffering and wanting to alleviate the suffering. And so the first thing is to have competence in one's role. So to be able to understand some of the ways to deal with a dying child. So, for example, I was just at a meeting last week where we're doing a research study with children who have relapsed childhood leukemia. And so one of the people was saying that you don't have to tell a child that a child is dying. A child often tells you that the child is dying. They seem to get this kind of understanding, you know, call it from some kind of a spiritual source or whatever. But frequently we don't want to talk to kids about the fact that they're dying. And one of my friends, colleagues, who has done a lot of work with dying children in Greece, says that she always starts with art and has the kids use art to talk about what they're experiencing. And there was a situation in which there was discussion going on between the parents and the doctor about whether or not to tell the child that the child was dying. And the child had done a drawing with my friend, who then took it down to the parent and doctor and said, you don't have to tell her that she's dying. She knows. And what she's saying in this drawing is she knows she's dying and she wants to go home, to die at home. And so, you know, to use art with dying kids or to use play therapy with dying kids is often a very helpful way of dealing with things.
You talk about the caregiver's reluctance to deal with it, and the child will tell you. Is there a time when it would be appropriate not to acknowledge that the child is dying with the child?
Well, it's tricky because frequently parents will not want a child to know. And I remember a psychiatrist lecturing to us in nursing school. So that was in the 60s. Now at Mass General, things were pretty advanced. But he said he had a 15-year-old whose parents had said that they did not want him to know that he was dying. And the 15-year-old said to the doctor, I know I'm dying, and I know my parents don't want me to know I'm dying. And so you need to be able to let me talk to you, and we'll both pretend together to my parents that I don't know that I'm dying. I mean, in general, if a kid is asking, then I think we have an obligation to let him know. And even, I mean, I can remember talking to a three-year-old when I was in nursing school who was sitting in his hospital bed blind and talking about, pretty soon I'm going to go live with the angels. And, you know, it was just incredible to listen to this little kid talking about what was going to be happening. So as a three-year-old.
Mm. That image of going to live with the angels, there's been a lot of talk in the field of death and dying around the use of euphemisms. And throughout these two interviews, I've used the term death and dying because I've been taught that one should use those terms. And I'm thinking if a three-year-old saying, I'm going to go live with the angels, that an appropriate response would not be, no, you're not going to live with the angels. Your life is going to come to an end and you're going to die. Presumably that's not an appropriate response. What is the current thinking about using euphemisms with children or indeed with their parents?
Well, this was, you know, part of the issue is what are euphemisms and what are belief systems?
Mm.
And, you know, for this child and for this child's parents, he was going to be with God and with the angels. And so there was a comfort for all of them to be thinking that this is what was going to be happening. And, you know, so one of the really important things is to not put your belief systems onto someone else, but to, you know, for example, ask a child who was talking about dying what he thinks that death is. And, you know, does he think that there is something after? And does he think he will know what's going on here? And, you know, maybe he can talk about that, but maybe it's going to be stuff that he's going to draw.
And how about the rest of the family? How do we support the rest of the family, the parents, the siblings, and anybody else, other caregivers who may be involved in the death of this child or young person?
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize what a horribly difficult situation it is for everybody concerned, and not to think that we have any kind of way of making it easier. I like to go back to Dr. Avery Weissman, who I had mentioned earlier, who was doing work at Mass General many years ago. And he said that in a really difficult situation, what we need to do is each of us needs to have the least possible goal. And if all of us have the least possible goal, we make it better than it would have been had we not been there. Hmm. So what is the least possible thing you can do with these people? And, you know, for example, just to be there and to be quiet, not to try to have answers in this situation, to ask people how they're feeling, you know, what is it like for them? Is there anything that can be done to be helpful? And letting them talk.
Would that apply as well to, I mean, we talked last time about sudden death, and there's a mm-hmm. term that you've used before, traumatic death.
Mm-hmm.
What changes with the sudden death or the traumatic death of a young person? And, you know, many youth workers that I know, many of them work in the realm of adolescence. And so mm-hmm. the death is an unexpected death. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a suicide. Mm-hmm. It's an overdose. It's a mm-hmm. violent death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How does one support parents or other family members in those moments?
Well, I mean, one of the things, I was talking with somebody about this just yesterday, and she was talking about her son's friend died an accidental death, kids doing stupid kid stuff. And that what was really helpful was her son and other friends went to the funeral, went to the wake and the funeral. And she said the mother and the relatives just held on to each of these kids and thanked them so much for coming, you know, so to be present, and for young people to continue to have some kind of relationship with the parent of the person who's died. Frequently, these parents want to be able to know what happens with the other kids in their kid's life. And yet you don't, you know, that needs to be dealt with carefully, because you can't become the child who has died. You know, you can be yourself and you can be present to those parents. You can let them know that you're still thinking about them. You can let them know that their child's memory lives on, you know, that people do remember him or her. And that's very important. But with sudden death in particular, you know, this, well, I mean, with both kinds of death, for to continue to have some kind of relationship or to, you know, periodically get in touch with the parent and let them know that you're thinking about them. Frequently, parents do want to maintain some kind of contact. At the time of death, writing something about the memories that you have of the person who's died can also be very helpful.
Would that be something that a professional could do? So if I had been working with a young person who died, and I was, whether I knew the family or not, would a reflection, a video, a audio, or a letter about my experiences with this young person, would that be something that might be appropriate to give to parents, even if I've never met them?
Yep. You know, because it's showing, you know, your young person had a life. And, you know, I want you to acknowledge this is a part of your young person's life that maybe you didn't know. And you know, because now there are so many things about their child's life that they're never going to know. And this is at least giving them some of these stories. And, you know, if you have pictures and these sorts of things of them, to be willing to share these with people. But perhaps sometime letting them know, I have some pictures of your son. Would you like to see them? Because somebody was saying the other day he came home from having been away and there were a whole pile of pictures of his deceased wife. And it caught him by such surprise that it was sort of uncomfortable. Mm. So letting somebody know that you have these and you're going to share them with them can be helpful.
You know, as we've been talking, you know, I've been finding myself becoming emotional and sad and reflecting on people I know and people who've died. And this is, you know, we've been talking for, you know, 45 minutes altogether. And, you know, I'm having these waves of emotion. You've been doing this for more than 40 years. Mm-hmm. How do you keep working in this area after so much time with people who are dying and so many death experiences of your own?
Well, I mean, I'm supposed to know something about it in that I write the chapters in lots of the textbooks about how do caregivers care for themselves. And so one of the things is practicing all of what I preach and doing self-care and doing what I can in a particular situation. One of the concepts is non-attachment to outcome. With true compassion, we do absolutely the best we can do, but, you know, we don't feel that we're in control in this situation. Another thing, you know, part of the spiritual process for me was when I had cancer several years ago and literally felt surrounded by people from the other side. And I came to realize that I was being walked through my own cancer experience by people from the other side, and essentially people I had worked with who had died and people whose bereft relatives I had worked with who, you know, I never knew the person who died, but I knew the bereft relatives. And it was this palpable aura of people that walked with me through my own cancer experience. This took me into a totally different place than I ever had known about or had encountered. But it made me realize that the work that we do does not go unrecognized. Now, you know, I probably couldn't continue to do this kind of work without believing that there is something beyond death, which is why, you know, when you talk in terms of euphemisms and stuff, you know, I do feel strongly that, I mean, my belief system is that there is something beyond death. And even people who don't believe that there is, you know, sometimes find as they start to die that there is. I remember very clearly a Jewish atheist who was dying on St. Michael's palliative care unit, and I went to see him the day before he died, and he said, you know, I don't believe in anything, but even though I don't believe in anything, I keep going back and forth between this room with the cross at St. Michael's and this beautiful garden. And he said, it looks like, even though I don't believe in anything, I'm going there anyhow. So, you see, people do sometimes come to believe that there is more as they are dying. And, you know, children certainly, you know, can have that experience, but so too can adults.
And so too, presumably, can caregivers.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's why I say, you know, my experience as a caregiver, you know, I am helped by my own spiritual belief system, and also the work of Rachel Naomi Remen, who talks in terms of mystery. And she says sometimes to have the answer is to just sit there as the world goes by, but mystery is to hold the question in the right company. And, you know, when we're dealing with death, when we're dealing with these kinds of tragedies, to me, much of it is mystery. And so, you know, I don't try to have answers to why people die and why kids have accidents or anything else. I hold that all of this is mystery. And, you know, I enter into being with people in this mystery.
It's a beautiful image, and one that really creates a sense of space and for whatever journey that individual needs to go on, regardless of our own belief system.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go. I know you need to go in minutes. What is there anything else that needs to or we should discuss regarding death before we end these two interviews?
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing is to have other people that you can discuss these issues with. You know, be it your own therapist, be it that you have a supervisor or someone, but you shouldn't be doing work with kids and death on your own, you know, particularly as a young practitioner in the field. You're going to need help in doing this work, and seek out the help that is available.
Dr. Mary Vachon, I want to thank you so much for giving us the time and helping us to talk through this difficult topic, and for all the work you've been doing for the past 40 years, and of course for being a most wonderful mother to myself.
Thank you. You know, and it's an honor and a privilege to do this kind of work, and I hope that you walk away with at least one or two new ideas. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this month's episode of C2Y Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, and visit us at c2ypodcast.org.